The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El-Khoury and today I'm joined by Lena Gardner, who is a partner at Raiden Solicitors. And Raiden Solicitors are, of course, sponsors of The Parents Show. So, Lena, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks, Lydia. Great to be here again.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you back. Today we're talking about co-parenting. So let me start off by, you're a qualified collaborative lawyer. Now, do you find when it comes to co-parenting, is it an advantage and does it help in those circumstances?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a family lawyer, so I deal with parents and couples who are going through a divorce and separation. And obviously, where there are children involved, there's a co-parenting relationship moving forwards after the separation, and it can be a really tricky area to navigate. So my collaborative training is really invaluable for my clients because it gives me a different perspective and it enables me to help my clients try and take the heat out of the situation where possible and look ahead and work constructively for the sake of the children when it comes to this really tricky area of co-parenting after a separation.
And we know from talking to you previously that, you know, that the constructive, practical element and pragmatic way of how you've told us about how collaborative law works really makes a difference when it comes to the kind of harmony or the relationship in
Definitely.
Going through a divorce.
That's right. And, you know, even if my client is not within the collaborative process itself, which is a very particular type of legal process, then I can still use, and I still do use, my skills and my background as a collaborative lawyer to help navigate the situation, often even when there are court proceedings underway. So, yeah, in summary, the skills and experience I have got can really help my clients to take a constructive approach with the happiness and the welfare of their children ultimately at the forefront of the situation.
Great. Okay, so I think we all probably know somebody who's co-parenting, but still I'd love to know, I'd love to get your expertise on this. So what do family lawyers actually put in place for their clients regarding arrangements around shared parenting or co-parenting?
So the first thing that I would say is that anybody going through a separation or a divorce where there's going to need to be an element of co-parenting moving forward, don't necessarily assume that the lawyers even need to necessarily be involved. Now, the reason I say that is there are many cases where couples go through a divorce and a separation where the lawyers maybe dealing with the divorce aspect or the financial aspects, but not necessarily the children aspects, because if the parents are able to agree and communicate on those issues between them, you may not even need your lawyer to become involved at all. So that's the first thing I would say. Luckily that is the case for quite a few of my clients. They are able to agree on these things and navigate them because, of course, the parents are generally the ones that know best. They know their children, they know their own situation. So never presume that, immediately you're going to have to go to a solicitor or that you're going to end up in court or anything like that, because absolutely not the case. If you do, you know, come to a stalemate or the issues are particularly contentious or difficult and you do need to seek legal advice on co-parenting issues, then there are all sorts of things that we can do to help resolve the situation. So often what is required is clarity and some kind of structure for the benefit of not only the parents, the co-parents, but primarily the kids. So one thing that we often look to put in place is something called a parenting plan or a parenting agreement, which effectively is a written agreement that both parents sign up to that sets out how the co-parenting relationship is going to work, how the children are going to divide their time between their parents,
and other issues, you know, to do with perhaps health or education and communication. So that's something that we would always want to discuss with our clients. And following on from that, if, you know, if things are really difficult and really contentious, it may be that an arbitrator or a judge in court has to be involved, and that would end with an order being made, which is a binding order that sets out those arrangements. So the key point is clarity, structure, and having some form of written agreement can be really beneficial.
That sounds so pragmatic, to have an agreement, particularly around communication. You could underestimate what a divisive role communication can play. But I know from speaking to friends who've been through this process that that's often quite a hurdle, getting your communication right and constructive. So actually putting it in the agreement is so clever.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes with the communication between co-parents, you know, less can be more. So, you know, often I see co-parents after a separation, they become can become quite embroiled in sort of lengthy emails or texts or WhatsApps that can kind of escalate, and the situation can end up getting quite heated with not much progress being made. And the children's welfare or what the children want can be sidelined in that scenario. So sometimes less is more. It's about communicating on the issues that really matter for the benefit of the children. And some of my clients might choose to have, for example, a dedicated email address that they use for that purpose, which just helps kind of compartmentalize those communications and keeps them focused, keeps them practical, minimizes the sort of escalation in the day-to-day communication. Some of my clients really benefit from using a parenting app, which can be used to exchange messages, exchange updates. You can have a shared calendar on there. You can share photos. So there are all of these different options available that can make a real difference when it comes to keeping things on an even keel.
That's amazing. I can't believe there's a parenting app or an app that benefits co-parenting. It's so clever. Like, I mean, if you want things to work, if you really, really want things to work, that would really cut out a lot of the noise, I'd imagine, or the dedicated email address, as you said. It's so clever because you're not then on tenterhooks all the time waiting for a message and jumping when there is a message.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And all of that can be dealt with as part of a written parenting plan. Now, of course, you know, life is not as straightforward as that all the time. And there's always going to have to be an element of flexibility. If an emergency arises, then of course you may have to allow some flexibility within the framework that you've agreed. But yes, that kind of clarity and structure, I find, is the key priority in all of this.
Brilliant. Okay, so just say there are parents who didn't avail of the app or didn't have an agreement where communication was agreed beforehand and they're not on good terms with each other. What can you do to backtrack that, or how can you help that situation?
So in that situation, one of the things that would always be at the forefront of my mind is, what are the resources out there that can help parents in that situation to have a reset and to get things back on track? So there are all sorts of innovations within family law world in this day and age. And we've talked about some of them already, like parenting apps and things like that. Other things to think about include mediation. It's always a good thing to think about, because that involves an independent mediator who can assist with the channels of communication without the situation escalating. There are professionals out there called parenting coordinators, who may also be able to assist. Some of my clients go to a divorce or separation coach to get their own support and their own, you know, coaching, really, to help manage the situation. So, yeah, loads and loads of innovations and different professionals out there to help the situation. Collaborative lawyers such as myself are also a good option to consider. And then if all else fails,
then arbitration and court proceedings are your kind of, you know, backstop, because ultimately an arbitrator or a judge will make the decision for the parents if all else has failed.
That is so helpful. I have to say, I had no idea. There are so many kind of avenues to of support to explore before you get to the more serious kind of steps that you need to take. So that's absolutely brilliant. I know also from talking to parents who are friends who have split up that holidays or sharing times, they're flashpoints, aren't they, when it comes to co-parenting. Have you got any tips on how to navigate those kind of flashpoints?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that holidays are a real flashpoint. I think part of the reason for that is that parents nowadays are incredibly busy, demanding careers, multiple competing, deadlines and interests on a day-to-day basis. So holidays are really sacred because they're that special time that you get to spend with your kids. So they can be very emotive, particularly Christmas, for obvious reasons. You want it to be such a magical and wonderful time for the children. And where you've got a difficult co-parenting relationship, it can be a real flashpoint. Having said that, there are things that can be done again to try and take the heat out of the situation and make it easier for the children and, you know, the co-parents themselves. But mainly we always have to be thinking about what's best for the children. I will always advise my clients to think about these things early. It's difficult if you're trying to agree, for example, the summer holidays, if you only start thinking about it in June, because you're not leaving enough time and then everybody's feeling under pressure to reach an agreement. And if you don't reach an agreement, you're then running out of time to have it resolved, you know, in a different remit. So it's always a good idea to plan as far ahead as possible. So ideally, you would sit down with the other parent or you would communicate with the other parent, whether directly or through solicitors or through a mediator or whatever that might look like, you know, ahead, well ahead of time, to look at the holidays for the year ahead and come up with a plan so that everybody's clear on what's going to be happening well ahead of time. And then, you know, that also is beneficial for the children, because children like structure and they like routine, and then they know what's happening as well. So that would be my first tip, is to not leave things until the last minute. The next thing I would always encourage my clients to do is view things from the point of view of the children and what's fair for the children. Listen to the children. You know, children, particularly when they reach a particular age or a particular level of maturity, are going to have a view as well. So it's really important to listen to your children. And compromise is key. Looking at the bigger picture, I would say that in many cases, if not all cases, reaching an agreement is actually more important than, you know, one day here or another day there. It's far better to try and reach a compromise than to have a protracted argument or a dispute about it. Because a lot of the time, the children are going to be aware that, you know, this conflict is taking place, and that's really damaging for children. So compromise is absolutely key. Trying to look at things from the point of view of the children, and also being positive about the other side of the family, about the other parent, so that the children can enjoy their time with the other parent, with the other extended family, rather than feeling guilty or feeling split between the two sides of the family.
That makes an awful lot of sense. And I can hear through the way you're describing it. I mean, it's really important to be mature about this, actually, isn't it? And it's not to point score, even though I think what might make Christmas more difficult than other holidays as well is what happens to the other parent, because it is a pretty important time not to be lonely, isn't it? So the parent who doesn't get the children doesn't get the buzz, the excitement, and they're forgoing a lot. So I can imagine that probably exacerbates the Christmas holiday of all the holidays, whereas summer holidays would be less emotional, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I'd say Christmas is definitely often the most contentious and the most emotional holiday of them all. The way that Christmas holidays tend to be dealt with nowadays is with, as you say, fairness at the forefront. So, you know, it would be incredibly rare for, you know, the children to always spend Christmas Day with one parent and for the other parent to never have the opportunity. That's just simply not wouldn't be fair, wouldn't be right. It wouldn't be in the children's best interest, other than if there were very, very specific reasons for that. So, you know, your children may not be spending Christmas with you, you know, this year, but then the year after, the arrangements can be reversed so that in the longer term, it's fair and it's balanced.
Brilliant. And you mentioned something, Lena, in the context of holidays, you mentioned talking to children. Does that extend to the wider co-parenting strategy? Do you often speak to the kids? Do they have a voice? And from when do they have a voice?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And obviously it's something that has to be handled sensitively, because the last thing that anybody wants is the children to feel like they are becoming unnecessarily involved in their parents' issues, the adult issues. And the last thing that anyone would want is for the children to feel split or like they have to take sides. But having said that, children, of course, they do have a voice and they have an important voice. And that voice must be listened to. The extent to which children will be, you know, consulted with and have their views taken into account, it will very much depend on their age and their level of maturity. Of course, it's going to be completely different with a 3-year-old than it is with a 13-year-old. So that's going to be a very relevant consideration. But generally speaking, yes, once children reach a certain age, sort of, you know, 8, 9, 10, that's the age at which certainly their views will become increasingly important and relevant. Some mediators are trained to consult directly with the children. So that can be very powerful because the children can be directly involved in the mediation process, which, you know, I think can be a really great thing. The mediator would assess whether or not it's appropriate for that to happen. But it's always a possibility. And equally, if you do end up in the court process, then the children, depending on their ages, will also be consulted with as part of the court process. Usually that's by a CAFCAS officer speaking with the children to ascertain what we call their wishes and feelings. So yeah, children's voices are really important.
That's brilliant. Really wise words, Lena. Thanks a million for that. And it really comes to my next question. You've given us some great tips. What other tips have you got for us, for parents who are listening, on steering the co-parenting puzzle, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a puzzle. And obviously, you know, all of the things that I'm saying today are, you know, tips and tricks as to how to deal with these situations. But we all know that people are complicated and lives are complicated, and it's not always as straightforward as that. You do your best. And if, you know, if you hit sticking points, then of course that's when you you speak to your solicitor and you take legal advice, because we don't live, you know, in an ideal world all of the time. But I think that there are some small ideas that can make a really big difference to children's lives. Some of these, I would say, should include, and this may sound obvious, but it can often get lost in the conflict, trying not to fight and argue in front of the children, not asking your children to choose sides or feel like they have to pick a side, accepting that your children's feelings may differ from your own.
Yeah, that's a good point, because obviously they are their own people and they love both parents very, very likely. So, of course, their feelings are going to be different. That's a great one.
Exactly. And then just trying to look at things from a positive viewpoint. So, for example, thinking about what you can do, what you have control over, not what your ex-partner should or shouldn't do. Because ultimately, you know, that's a difficult thing to control, but you can control your own reactions. You can control your own behaviour. So trying to focus on that, focusing on what has worked rather than what hasn't worked in the past, can be a good one.
remembering that very small steps can lead to big changes. And really importantly, looking after yourself so that you can be the best parent that you can be is critical as well.
That's it's a mantra we often say on the Parents Show, because obviously if you've had a good night's sleep, if you're, you know, you're not drinking too much coffee or you're getting plenty of fresh air, and you're going to be better placed to be able to do the best for your children and present the best side of yourself in any kind of contentious situation.
Absolutely. It can sound a bit cliche, can't it?
Yeah.
But it's true. It's really true. Those small day-to-day acts of self-care, or however you want to frame it, can make all the difference.
Yeah. Brilliant. Oh, really, really helpful tips for our parents there, Elena. Thanks so much. And just one last thing I wanted to ask you about before we let you go. What about the extended family? So that can also be a bit of a bone of contention, can't it? Do you have any tips about how to navigate the extended family for people who are co-parenting?
Yeah, I do. I think that extended family, and in particular grandparents, often play a really important role in children's lives. So it's not something that we should dismiss. Quite often those family members can suffer the fallout when parents are in conflict, and they may feel that they have to take sides. So my tip would be, as a co-parent, explain to the extended family that although you understand that they might have, you know, divided loyalties, it's really important that they don't speak negatively, don't speak badly about the other side of the family, because that could impact the children and make the conflict, you know, even more significant. Grandparents in particular do have legal rights in their own right as a grandparent. So it's always an option to seek legal advice from a specialist family solicitor if you are a grandparent who feels that you're being denied a relationship with your grandchildren. But yeah, focusing on the changes that you can make rather than hoping for changes from the, you know, the other person is usually the best starting point.
Lovely. Great stuff. Thanks a million, Lena. It's brilliant having you back on the show. And thanks for all your valuable advice for our listeners.
Thanks, Lydia.
Great to have you on.
See you soon.
See you soon. So that was Lena Gardner, partner at Raiden Solicitors. And of course, Raiden Solicitors are sponsors of the Parents Show. So we're going to take a little break on the Parents Show on Mix 92.6. We'll be back with more chat in just a few minutes, so stay tuned.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
So welcome back to the Parents Show on Mix 92.6. It's great to have you with us again. I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and today I'm joined by one of our wonderful new co-presenters on the Parents Show, Becky Bowen. Becky, how are you? And thanks for joining us on the show.
I'm really well, thank you. I'm really looking forward to being here.
Yeah, well, not only thank you for being on the show, but thank you for being a new part of the team. We're really excited. We've grown on the Parents Show, and it's just fantastic to have so many diverse new parent voices on the show. So today is really about letting our listeners get to know you, Becky. So tell us a bit about where you live, your family, and what you're up to.
Yeah, sure. I'm in Welwyn Garden City. I have got a stepson that's 25. I've got a 15-year-old daughter, 13-year-old son, and a 10-year-old son. And I'm married, and we've got a retired greyhound as well.
That sounds like a very busy household.
It is, yeah. I also run my own business as well, helping people really kind of work with their inner child and overcome, you know, you get those stuck things that you're not sure how to work with. So I do breath work and also work with kind of that part of your brain, like a rewire, I suppose, of rewiring why you think those thoughts. So, yeah. But my parenting journey changed my career massively. So I was a street lighting design engineer before I had children. My main contract was Westminster City Council. We worked as a partnership. And then I had my daughter. And then the thought of going back to a office-based job and then a site-based job was, it just felt too much to be able to deal with, really. So I retrained my head of Sarah Ockwell Smith as a gentle parenting teacher and teaching new parents how to calm their babies and toddlers, so to speak, which was great. It was amazing. I loved it. It was just how learning how the kind of infant's brain worked and building up those patterns and creating those safe foundations. It was incredible. But when I had my second child, I got postnatal depression and anxiety, and it just felt a bit kind of, who's going to listen to me when I feel so far from being calm? And within that then, and ironically, St. Albans and Harpenden, I run Harpenden Sling Library.
Brilliant.
Showing people how to carry their baby in a sling, because for me, when I had postnatal depression, having maintaining that connection with my baby was so key. I actually had two under two when he was born, so I needed to also work with my toddler as well. And so that felt amazing, being able to help people in the community, provide them with slings so that they could also get that same benefit that I did. And then baby number three came along, who was fiercely independent. So for the first year, it was great, 18 months, and then he learned to walk and then he wouldn't go in a sling.
so all your expertise didn't.
Yeah. So, I had three under five when he was born. So I needed a sling even more so at first. But then what happened is I couldn't keep up to date with all of the new slings that were coming in and out. So, and also my own anxiety journey then led me into kind of like a bit more of a holistic path of well-being. And so I kind of retrained again and went down that path as well. So hence to being where I am today.
That sounds such a fascinating route. And I'm going to take you a little bit of a step back, because I want to hear more about what you said. So at one stage you had three under five.
Yes.
Holy moly. I bet that was fun times.
Yeah, it was certainly. Yeah. I mean, I was breastfeeding as well. So I just felt like, and actually when my youngest was born was when my daughter started school. So it was full on everything in there. And he hated the car as well, which was great, because every time I'd get his car seat, he'd start screaming. So we had all of that into it as well. I wanted to homeschool, funnily enough, my children. And my daughter actually said to me, that she wanted to go to school. So we went around and we looked at lots of different schools, and we found a beautiful school in Essendon, funnily enough, which is a really small school, and that really worked for us. So that's where the big two went. Really lovely community nurture in school. But it did mean that I had to drive. So it was a bit of a nightmare, because she started in reception as my middle son started in nursery.
And wow.
Just, so within that, whilst also running a business as well. So it was full on, let's say it was full on, but it was great. Actually, I received lots of help. I kind of self-referred myself to Homestart. Have you heard of Homestart?
Ah, fantastic organization.
Oh, such an incredible charity, and really helped me just to give me like a few minutes to myself so that I could kind of, I was aware of mental health conditions from where I'd been in 2013. So I could kind of spot the red flags coming up already. So I knew that I couldn't do it on my own. I needed support from other people. So yeah, working with Homestart, and then another one, which is Red Tent, which you may not have heard of.
I haven't heard of Red Tent, no.
It's like a women's circle where you basically just go once a month and you're supported by other women and you're heard and listened to. So quite often people want to fix you. And this isn't about that. It was about somewhere where you could talk and not be interrupted. No one would be judging you. They wouldn't feel shame. And so that was a real game changer for me as well on my own well-being journey. So yeah, those things really, really helped me kind of get my, and obviously my husband was working, so he could only do so much when he came home. Amazing support. And yeah, just, it wasn't easy, but it was, now I look back, now my kids are in teenage years, I think, God, it was much simpler then.
Yeah, really. Oh, that's so funny. How did you diagnose yourself? How did you know something wasn't right, Becky? Because, I mean, it's fantastic that you did self-refer and that you found an opportunity or looked for opportunities to get support and help. But I'd love to know how you did it.
I think for me, I'm always that 110% person. So if I'm going to do something, I'm going to fully do it. In 2013, I had a bit of a mental health breakdown, and we were actually living with family at the time. So it was even more intense. And so like with motherhood, parenthood, I researched, I did hypnobirthing. So I wanted to find out all of the best ways that I could do things. And so when I was poorly, I researched it and I looked at ways that I could help myself, and kind of reducing my stress levels was one of those things. In 2016, I got diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, but I thought I'd had IBS my whole adult life, but actually it wasn't. And so it was just researching, looking into it, finding ways I could help myself. Unfortunately, I wasn't particularly helped in the best way because I was breastfeeding. So when I went to the doctors, they said that I was quite limited in what medication I could take. So I was like, right, okay, well, I don't have time. Well, I've got three kids depending on me. How can I make this work? And so it was just realizing and knowing that the way that I was feeling wasn't normal. And actually my children were dependent on me being well. And I suppose helpfully working in the, like with the new parents, is having those signposts for other parents and then going, oh, this is me right now. And this is how I'm feeling. And knowing, you know, the oxygen mask theory, have you heard of that one? Like, you must fit your own oxygen mask first to be able to look after everybody else. So I knew already for me that actually if I didn't meet my needs, then my children's needs wouldn't be met either. So it was really kind of being very aware that actually if I'm not feeling great, I'm this emotional container for my three toddlers at the time, or one preschooler, that actually they're having huge meltdowns. So if they're having huge meltdowns, then something's kind of going amiss with me. So I need to work with myself first, and then, and only then can I meet my kids' needs. And actually there's a beautiful thing that came out of that, because in 2018 I created a retreat called Self Care, Self Love, which was basically all of the amazing people that I'd met on my journey. I was able to go, can you come and talk to people about the experience and the knowledge that you shared with me, so that people haven't got to go through 10 years of this.
Yeah.
So that they can like kind of tap into the kind of wisdom that you've got, and things like meditation, yoga, and, you know, things that are slightly out there, like crystal healing and Reiki. I became a Reiki master and trained in all of those things to be able to make myself feel well. So it's like the student becomes the teacher. So I ended up kind of drinking it all in, and then trained and become kind of the person that helped other people as well, which has always been my passion. Is if you find something that works, why wouldn't you want to tell other people about it? Which is why it feels so great to be able to come here to Mix 92.6, because then that means I can share all the amazing people that I've met on my journey as well.
Brilliant. Oh, it sounds fantastic. And the thing that really stands out from what you're saying, Becky, is you never stand still. You're just always, you're always learning and always bringing in new elements to your expertise, and in such an altruistic way. It's really lovely to hear about it. And how did the Sling Library come about? That's a brilliant idea. I mean, I remember hearing about it. I never went to Sling Library because I think I had one of the usual ones that you just strap on, it worked, and I used it nonstop. But you mean a different, you don't mean one of the kind of off the shelf kind of ready made slings.
Well, it's
changed
a lot now. So when I first started out, you were either a bit crunchy mama and had your slings and your waving wraps and things like that, or you went to the high street, and which is where I started from. Like my eldest daughter, let's call her an in-arms baby. She never let me put her down. She would always scream, and like to the point that I would drag the baby bouncer to the toilet with me so that I could go. So I was like, there has to be a different way. So I joined a natural parenting group on Facebook and met some amazing people. And within that, I trained with a few different baby wearing schools. I mean, it's probably changed a lot now. This was like over 15 years ago. And found that actually a lot of the, back then, the high street carriers made your baby like an extension of you. So, you know, when you see the baby's legs bouncing and flaying around, it's great. They feel like they're having lots of fun. But when they're tired, it kind of doesn't create. So what the slings were like an extension of you. So the lovely stretchy wraps that you can get, and having the baby in the correct ergonomic position so that it's supporting their development as well. So learning about that and training with that, I met an amazing group of people that were already running Harpenden Sling Library. And actually the lady that was running it was going back to teaching, so she couldn't do the library anymore. And she said, would you like to take over it? And I was like, Oh, okay. Not realizing, like, back then it was held in Harpenden at the Oval back then. And it was, I obviously had my two children with me at the time, and I was pregnant with my third, and it was supposed to finish at 12, and it was so busy. And it was also in conjunction with the breastfeeding clinic as well. And luckily, thankfully, they started to help me, because I wasn't getting out of there till 2 o'clock. My kids were starving. My youngest was going through a biting stage. I was terrified that he was going to bite another child. So we kind of joined forces, really. And then we were able to meet everybody's needs. And we moved to a children's centre. And then we moved, I don't know if it's still running, actually, because I've lost contact with a lot of them. But yeah, so it was just kind of knowing somebody and then coming into it and then really kind of bringing that in. But the amount of new parents that we've helped, some of them may be listeners to this show, I don't know, on the journey, was just, yeah, just when I was doing the workshops. So I would do group workshops, or I'd go and see new parents on that. Like, they'd ring me and say, can you please come and help me? And I'd bring like my whole suitcase full of slings and demo dolls, which were like weighted dolls. And you'd see the new parents as you walk in, and it was almost like rabbit in headlights. You know, there was tired, you know, the baby was crying, the baby was overwhelmed, the mum was overwhelmed, dad was overwhelmed, because bless him, he was trying to help. But like, obviously, if they were breastfeeding and the baby needed mum, and the mum was shattered. And then I'd leave them in this, normally a stretchy wrap, because that's what works best for newborn babies, because they're so close. It's almost like they're in the womb. And mum would leave just literally gently swaying, going, thank you so much, and being so much calmer and just being able to meet the baby's needs. But because the baby was in the sling, the mum could go for a wee, mum could eat, mum could, you know, sit down if she wanted to. And so it was just a complete game changer for the new parents in that stage. And it was for me, absolutely. I think I don't think I would have overcome kind of the overwhelm of parenting three kids under five without that accessibility to those things.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love what you said. Did you say your baby's was an arm baby?
In arms, baby.
In arms, baby. I love it. So diplomatic. Well done. And if there's any other parents who have in arms babies out there, you know, it's great to know that something as simple as a sling can be a game changer.
It really is. I can't recommend it enough. She was a November baby. So I was very anxious anyway as a new mum. And so I would put her in all of these prams, like the blankets and everything else, and I would be terrified that she would be overheat. In fact, she did overheat, because we lived near Cambridge at the time, and I remember wrapping her up for going Christmas shopping, and we'd gone into the Grand Arcade in Cambridge, and I looked and she was pink, and I was like, oh my god, I haven't unwrapped, she's got all these layers on, we've taken her coats off. And so that was like another point for me. It was like, oh god. But when you've got them in a sling, you know, there's no need for these big rain suit and pram suits and things, because they'll overheat, and it's actually quite dangerous to put them in these big suits, because they can fall down and then that can impede their breathing. Whereas the sling counts as a layer, they're next to you, your heart rate regulates their heart rate. The less layers you've got between you acts as your body temperature regulates their body temperature. I'll tell you an interesting fact in a minute about women's breasts as well, which is incredible. And then you put a cardi or a coat over the top of the both of you. So when you, like for me, I needed to get out and go for a walk, so I would just put the baby in a sling and a coat on, and then a hat on, obviously the bits that are poking out. But yeah, that was a lifesaver. But just the bit about the boobs, honestly, part of my training was about preterm babies and babies that were young. And there was an incredible book by Dr. Niels Bergman, and they were based in Africa, where they don't have the neonatal units and everything else. And so if you feel your boobs, if you feel your breasts, they're a different temperature to the rest of your body. And whereas men don't have that ability to regulate the temperature. Dad's always a bit warmer, which is why babies tend to sleep longer on dads. But your breast can independently change their temperature. So like for people that had twins, if they were doing skin to skin, then it would regulate to the baby that they were kind of skin to skin with. And then obviously that helps their neurodevelopment and their, you know, kind of recreating that womb space, which is what you want to do in the first 4 months, is recreate that womb space, because that's where they do like huge leaps of the development and stuff as well. And it does create very strong and independent children, because you're creating the foundations where their needs are being met. But also you recognize their cues more. So your baby will cry less, because you like that, you know, the little noises that they make, you learn to know what one is for hunger, what one is for tired, what one, we obviously, you're that close to them, you'll know when they need a nappy change. But it's just incredible. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. I can see so many potential shows from the topics that you're touching on. Wow. So would you give us a, just, I'd love to know what you're doing now, Becky. You said you have your own business. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that and then give us a taster of some of the shows you're going to work on?
Oh, well, so a lot of what I do now works with the subconscious mind. So, you know, those intrusive thoughts that you get when you're trying to do something and you can't do it and you're holding yourself back and you're blocking yourself. So what I do now, so my journey went full parenting to my own journey around my own health and working with the inner child of, like, if you think for the first 5 years, we're conditioned, we're taught by our caregivers. And if those situations aren't ideal, we're going to have unmet needs. Have you heard of Maslow's hierarchy of triangle of needs? If we're not meeting those first fundamental needs, then we're going to struggle in later life. And so it works on meeting those needs and being able to rewire the ones that weren't great and kind of empower that version of ourselves. So the inner child, but going to work with like the little version of yourself that didn't have those needs met. And they can be really, I remember one that I worked with, I wasn't able to send emails. It sounds really ridiculous. And I went and worked with this version. You find the memory of where this was created. And this was a six-year-old version of myself. Mum was cooking dinner. So my mum was a single parent in the 80s. And we kind of asked the younger version of myself, what's going on? You know, why are you feeling? She felt out of control. And why did she feel out of control? Because she needed her mum. Where was mum? My mum was not a bad parent in any way. And so it's not parent shaming. But we kind of, you go to kind of like a journey. And we said, you know, can you come and help Becky? She needs a cuddle. She needs to feel calm. The version, the journey, this sounds completely bonkers. But it was like, can you come and help Becky? She's like, no, I can't. I'm cooking dinner. And it was like, well, okay. So you needed to calm mum down, which goes back to what we was doing about the oxygen mask. How can we help you? And she said, I just need a break. So we just gave her, do you remember the coffee cups in the 80s, like the brown glass ones?
Yes, indeed. Oh my gosh.
Coffee. And then we said, can you come and help Becky now? She gave Becky a hug and then Becky felt calm. And then just something switches in you. So you empower that version of yourself and then you can have that rewire, that mindset rewire where you can then shift whatever it was that's holding you back. So that was the kind of the mindset side of it. But then the breathwork side of it, quite a lot of us are not great in our mind. Like you don't want to be in your mind. So the breathwork bypasses all of that and you can have like an emotional release and release that in your body, which is so powerful. And it works with the nervous system. And it resets the nervous system. So for me, it's kind of gone full circle that I used to help the mums with their babies, but now I help the mums with themselves so that they can feel more regulated. You know, teens aren't easy, let's face it. Screens aren't easy, let's face it, because they're dominating their entire lives. Menopause is horrendous in terms of like trying to cope with this rage and this anxiety and all of these other things. So just being able to use those tools allows us to be able to feel calmer and be able to kind of move forward. But, you know, you've got all things like empty nest syndrome now. Like, oh. I know when my youngest was, he went into year five and they could do independent travel to school. Now I've done a school run since 2015 and all of a sudden I'm not needed for the school run anymore. And there was this real grief and lost inside of that. What's my purpose now? And so it's working with being able to, you know, find your purpose, trying to overcome anxiety, trying to overcome health and physical conditions. It does all of that. It's so incredible and so easy. And the great part with the work that I do is it will never take you back into that trauma. So if you have had a traumatic, it's really trauma informed. It wouldn't take you back into that space where, you know, if you've had quite a significant amount of trauma, you don't, a lot of talking therapies will re-traumatize you. Your brain doesn't know the difference. So it will, you'll put your body back into that state of re-traumatization. Whereas the work that I do doesn't do that. It bypasses, not in a bad way. I know a lot of people talk about spiritual bypassing, but it just allows you to free it. So the breathwork allows you to have that emotional release in your body. And whereas the subconscious healing allows you to have that emotional reset and rewire in your body. So it just, it's really powerful, really powerful. And I love it. I love it so much because that was the thing for me is doing all of the other holistic therapies was great, but it was almost quite sparkly and surface level. And then I'd keep coming back to the problems because it never really cleared them at a kind of root level, a deeper level. So it just has this reset in the whole body that it rewires it completely. So, yeah.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. And it sounds, you sound very fulfilled and passionate about it, Becky.
Yeah, I think because the results speak for themselves. So it means that I'm not stuck in that almost like that victim mode anymore, whereas I used to be very negative and very self-berating and putting myself down all of the time, whereas I'm not anymore. So yeah, that's a lot of that. But I've met some amazing people on my journey. And so I'm really excited about bringing those people to you as well.
Sounds brilliant, Becky. So, I mean, topics that you've touched, I know you're going to bring us your wealth of knowledge around ADHD. You're going to discuss menopause, screen-free time. They're just, and all of the holistic health treatments that you know so well and know so much about. You're going to bring all that to the show, which is really, really exciting.
I can't wait. I'm going to also amazing other people that have helped on a more practical level as well. So I'm going to bring in Ruby from Wooka, who is about period pants, which is so empowering in itself. I wish that we had those when we were growing up.
Can you imagine? It would have been such a different teen time, wouldn't it?
I mean, I remember starting my period at school, and not starting my period, but when I had my period at school, and we had Matron then. I don't even think they've got Matrons anymore, have they? And you'd go and we'd call them duck tails if you needed a sanitary towel when you was at school, because they were so thick, you used to waddle with them. Whereas these now the period pants that they bring is so incredible. And her journey and her story is absolutely amazing. It's so good. My daughter uses the period pants and swimwear, game changer. Game changer.
Totally. So you're going to have Ruby on the show. We haven't spoken to Ruby for a few times, so it'd be fantastic. I hope her business is thriving. I mean, when she came up with the idea, when she first developed it, I remember it just being such a light bulb moment to think that, I mean, environmentally, self-confidence wise, I mean, there's so many pluses to using period pants.
Hugely. And I'm sorry if it's maybe a bit too much information, but like, I know when you go through the menopause, your cycles change and the kind of the bleed changes and the leaking and things like that. And because of the way that they're designed, you don't have that anymore. You don't have that stress. You don't have that discomfort. And it's just so much easier. And the other products that she's bringing in are also incredible as well. So Ruby, yeah, I'm looking forward to speaking to Ruby. And then I'm also going to be speaking to Laura Cowan from Papaya, which is about screens. So screens for children, which is a complete and utter bane of my life. Like you would not believe, like I love my kids. And we held off for so long of having things like the Xbox and mobile phones. And then we caved when everyone was like, but they got it, they play it. And we kind of caved in and gave it. And if I hear one more minute when I say it's dinner time, or can I just finish this round, which was the boys. And then, you know, my daughters, I often look at her and she's on a phone and it just, I'm like, come on, get off the phone now, get off the phone. You don't need to be on it for so long. And I set time limits and all of those things, and they know how to get around them. They're not naughty kids, but they just, that's what they do. That's how they communicate with their friends. So yeah, there'll be Laura from Papaya, and somebody from the Screen Free Childhood will be coming in as well to talk to us. And I actually went to a talk they did at my youngest son's school on Friday, and it's so reassuring as well to hear that I'm not the only one going through it. So many other parents are going through it as well. And, you know, by doing a complete ban on them isn't always the best option. A lot of us have already gone down that route, so we don't want the guilt and the shame attached to it as well. So it's a really incredible, yeah, I'm looking forward to being able to bring that to you as well.
Yeah, it's a big conversation and a great one to dig into. There's so many perspectives to it, but we were just talking to a lovely counselor for a therapist for young men in particular recently, Jack from Chat with Jack. Definitely. And he was saying, you know, really he feels very strongly about how badly screen time is affecting attention spans for young men. It's just so detrimental. So yeah, I mean, we're the parents show, we've got to be leading the conversation on that topic, don't we?
Hugely. Yeah. And it's interesting talking to counselors and therapists and how they're now seeing an increase in that being a new addiction that people are coming with about addictions for screens. I mean, I know for as a parent, I mean, I absolutely used it to numb out. Like, I don't really drink alcohol. So I'd pick up my phone and I'd scroll on social media just as a way to speak to other parents. I love my kids, but when they were tiny, being stuck with three young children, there was a bit of a lull in adult conversation. And you know, my kids never did the why stage. They would do what would happen if, and that would just be like, ah. You know, they learn from us, and that's awful. When you look at, I mean, I remember going to toddler groups. I used to help run a toddler group, and watching the kids role play is, you know, pretending something's a phone.
Yeah, it's such a shame. Or touching books and trying to swipe on books. But let's save that for our conversation. There's so much to be said about it, Becky. And I honestly, your passion, your expertise, and your altruism to the topics that you're going to bring to the show, I'm so excited. And thank you so much for joining the Parents Show team.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Great stuff. Thanks, Becky.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.